Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A verdict today in the federal corruption trial of former House Speaker Sal DeMasi. Guilty. Not on one count, but on 7 counts out of 9, including on extortion and conspiracy to defraud citizens of honest services.
The verdicts represent a stunning fall from grace for DeMasi, who spent 30 years in public service and reached the top post in the state legislature. Now he faces a possible prison sentence of up to 20 years for using his office to help a software company win lucrative state contracts in exchange for kickbacks. Here he is speaking just moments after his conviction.
This is an intent crime, and I knew that I did not have the requisite intent to commit this crime. I told all of you when I was indicted that I never made any decision unless it was based on what I thought was in the best interest of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, my constituents. I said I never, ever made a decision other than that.
That's former House Speaker Sal DeMasi speaking outside a federal court just a short while ago after his conviction. WBUR's David Boeri has been following this long and complicated case and joins us now in the studio. David, good to see you.
Hi, Anthony.
So, David, describe the scene in the courtroom when the verdict was read. I imagine it must have been quite emotional.
It was. DeMasi himself was stoic. Remember, there's DeMasi, then there's Richard McDonough and Dick Vitale, all facing 8 or 9 counts. And so they started the count. DeMasi first, guilty, then not guilty, then not guilty. And it ran for each of the defendants and ran that way. Guilty, guilty, not guilty. At the end of the count, Vitale had all not guilties. He's out of the case. McDonough had 6 of 8. And DeMasi had been convicted of 7 of 9, including extortion and conspiracy. His wife was crying during that time, holding her daughter. His stepson came into the courtroom a little later on, saw his mother, hugged, cried. The jury was dismissed. There was a slight recess. DeMasi staring at the table, then came over, hugged his wife and children. They cried together.
Mm. Now, lawyers for DeMasi, David, appeared confident throughout the trial. They called only 3 witnesses over 3 days, then they rested their case. They apparently thought the prosecution had failed to prove the case. What happened?
They didn't have a lot to work with, in short. You know, you go in, there's a reason they call the federal courthouse the House of Pain. 95% of cases that go in are settled by plea deals. The rest that go forward, over 70%, I'd say 80% conviction rate. Lemmings have only a slightly worse chance. They were up against it. They did not want to put their defendants on the stand. They were afraid of that. And all along, they have been planning for an appeal. They've been putting the basis for an appeal in, and that's what they're talking about now.
Well, let's listen to Sal DeMasi talking about the appeal. This is what he said shortly after his conviction to reporters.
We practice law because we were able to have an outside income under the legislative exemption under state law. But evidently, federal law seems to require something different. And it was an unknown factor for all of us. And I think that contributed greatly to the situation in this courtroom. And I think that is going to be a lot of the basis for our appeal.
So, David, what do you make of that? He's talking there about the basis for his appeal, the separation between state and federal
statutes. That's right. This is the classic knowingly, willfully, and intentionally being required. He's saying it's not the intent. And it goes to this idea that you practice law, and people at the State House are allowed to practice law. They're allowed to make incomes. They have to make incomes. DeMasi told me before the trial, before the verdict was, we were waiting around. He says, you know, the way they're running things now, the only people who are going to be able to serve in the House are 22-year-olds and 75-year-old widows. But it also comes down to honest services fraud and this complicated business. It's been up in front of the Supreme Court. They did rule last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that you do not have to disclose a conflict of interest a conflict of interest in order to be convicted. So that's another thing. They're going to go, and I would bet to you that within two years, I'm going to be reporting on this story from the Supreme Court.
Mm. Well, let's listen for a bit to Carmen Ortiz, the U.S. attorney, and what she said about the case, and then talk a little more about the government's case.
When you look at the heart of the case, this was a situation where he set up a scheme where he received payments through an intermediary, his legal colleague, for doing nothing, for his colleague doing nothing, but rather for him to get the fees for using his position as Speaker of the House to influence the awarding of a state contract.
So there's U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz laying out what she seems to think was a pretty clear-cut case there.
This was a case with just an ocean full of circumstantial evidence, buttressed buttressed by emails, by phone call records, and then you bring in two people, the former law associate of Sal DeMasi, Stephen Topazio, to testify largely for the government under an immunity deal, and then the notorious and odious Joseph Lally, who the government itself held their nose at but said he was telling the truth. All of that was what DeMasi and his co-defendants were up against. Vitale was acquitted on all the other counts, but Carmen Ortiz makes the point. She said this is a home run. Justice is served, and a message has been sent to the culture of corruption at Beacon Hill. It's been dealt a blow.
Well, let me ask you about that, David. You've been covering politics in the state for some time. Put this into some kind of perspective. DeMasi, third consecutive House Speaker to go down on federal charges. We've heard an awful lot about the sordid way business is done on Beacon Hill. Any sense that this conviction will finally change that?
Well, interestingly enough, I must say that the charges against DeMasi far more serious against than against the previous two speakers who both pled out rather than going to trial to felonies. This was the most serious charge against all of the speakers. DeLeo this afternoon, Robert DeLeo, the new speaker that's replaced DeMasi, that DeMasi helped become speaker, expressed his sense of insult that Carmen Ortiz would be calling this a culture of corruption. DeLeo would tell you he's taken steps to end this. However, there's a huge question mark, and you know, I've said earlier that the unindicted conspirator in this case all along was Beacon Hill. It remains the unindicted co-conspirator. There are lots of questions, and they have to deal with this issue of legislators being allowed to work because they're having to make incomes in order to make middle-class incomes when most of them are lawyers and they engage in this practice of referral fees. So that's a huge thing that has to be that has to be dealt with.
Well, these are among the questions we're going to be exploring in the later in our program. David Boeri, thanks very much for coming in. Thanks for all your hard work on this case.
You're welcome. Thank
that's
you.
That's WBUR's David Boeri reporting that former House Speaker Sal DeMasi found guilty today on 7 of 9 charges. Coming up in just a minute, more analysis of the conviction of DeMasi, and we'll get your reaction at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking now about the conviction of former Massachusetts House Speaker Sal DeMasi. He was found guilty today on 7 of 9 counts against him, including extortion, fraud, and conspiracy to defraud citizens of his honest services. Here's DeMasi speaking to reporters just moments after the jury announced the verdict.
Second thoughts, Mr. Speaker. No second thoughts.
Second thoughts on what? I was a legislator who did the best I could, and I made a lot of good decisions, and I helped a lot of people, and I would never have any second thoughts of running for office again.
DeMasi is the third consecutive speaker of the Massachusetts House to be convicted of federal charges. He was the only one to go to trial, and he faces up to 20 years in jail. His future will be decided at a sentencing hearing currently scheduled for August. So, what do you make of it, this hat trick of indicted House speakers? Do you agree with the guilty verdict? And does it prove to you that the system is working, that corruption on Beacon Hill is being properly exposed? You know, most of the lawmaking there is above board, but can today's guilty verdict signal a change to what goes on in Beacon Hill back rooms? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet. We're at Radio Boston, and we're following the hashtag DeMacy. Here's a little bit more from the courthouse today. This is Sal DeMacy's attorney, Thomas Kiley.
There is obviously disappointment in today's verdict. We all, as lawyers, respect the juries, but sometimes jurors don't get it quite right.
Well, joining us now is David Frank. He's a reporter for Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly. He's been following this case day in and day out. So, David Frank, what do you make of what Tom Kiley says? Did the jurors get it right or not?
Well, I mean, they got it right because you had a fair trial. Everybody who watched this case and observed it knows that the case was extremely well tried. There were a lot of disputed issues, but the name of the game when you have a trial is to let 12 citizens of the Eastern District of Massachusetts decide guilt or innocence, and they clearly did that here.
Okay, so looking back at how the case was actually argued on both sides, I mean, the prosecution, they argued for 16 days, had more than 20 witnesses, then Sal DeMacy's defense team gets up and only argues for about 2 days, and as many witnesses as you can count on one hand, if even fewer. So was that a bad bet on their part?
I'd say no. I mean, clearly the prosecution indicted the case and felt confident that they had the goods to deliver a guilty verdict. And as Dave Boeri was saying in the previous segment, they had a very strong circumstantial case along with the testimony of the cooperating witness, Joe Lally. But I don't think it's fair to say that the defense made a mistake by not calling witnesses. It's not a situation where it's the defendant disproving the government's case. The government has to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, and it's certainly a fair strategy for any defense lawyer to choose to sort of pick at the government's case to sort of try to create reasonable doubt through cross-examination. And clearly, the cross-examination that the defense spent on Joseph Lally, that cooperating witness, was very strong, was very aggressive. The jury didn't carry the day. That doesn't mean they made a mistake.
U.S. Attorney Anthony Fuller, in closing arguments, said to the jury, use your common sense and look at the entire picture. When a public official takes action in return for payments to his friends, that is not just a breach of duty, that's a federal crime. Okay, so that's what the prosecution said. But it seemed like a lot of the talk was that what really was going to matter at the end of the day were those instructions that the judge handed to the jury and what they could and could not consider. Do you think that that ended up being true, that the instructions were pivotal in this case?
Absolutely. And those instructions are going to continue to pop up as we sort of look forward to the appeal. And whether that ends up at the First Circuit or ultimately the Supreme Court, there's no question that the way that the judge instructed the jury, and in particular on this honest services fraud charge that was so central to the case, that's a live issue. That is going to be one of the critical issues on appeal. And so certainly the way in which the judge instructed is going to be scrutinized on appeal.
All right. Here's another cut from today at the courthouse. This is U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz responding to a question about the next phase in the story of Sal DeMacy, and that is about sentencing.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of sentencing because that is a pending matter, but we will be seeking a significant jail sentence.
The Supreme Court has...
So, David Frank, remind us what Sal DeMacy could be facing, and I don't know if you care to prognosticate on the likelihood that he may spend any time in jail at all.
Well, I mean, and clearly, I think as you were playing that clip, my question to the U.S. attorney is where she thinks this case will ultimately be litigated. I think this case going to Washington, D.C., to the United States Supreme Court, and one of the key questions and probably the thing that Sal DeMacy and Richard McDonough are most concerned about right now is where they're going to be while this case goes through the appellate process. Will they be released pending appeal, or will they be sentenced to prison to start serving their term? As far as the number, I mean, I'm not going to guess as far as where the numbers come down on the sentencing guidelines, but I have not heard anybody say that this case is going to be anything less than 5 years. I've heard anywhere up to 8-9 years, and we certainly know from the testimony that was presented during this case that the cooperating witness, Joe Lally, had he not cooperated, was looking at a sentence that could have been anywhere up to 12 years. So there's no question that the U.S. attorney said she's looking for a significant number. Chuck Turner, just a couple months ago, got a three-year sentence for taking bribes that were certainly not as severe as this case. I could not envision a situation where the number was anything less than five, but ultimately I'm not wearing a robe, and that's what Judge Wolf gets paid the big bucks to decide.
David Frank, reporter for Mass Lawyers Weekly, always great to have you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We are talking about the guilty verdict in the trial of former Massachusetts House Speaker Sal DeMasi. He was found guilty of 7 of 9 counts today at the federal courthouse in Boston. What do you make of it? What do you think of the fact that a former House Speaker, the third one now in Massachusetts, has been found guilty on corruption charges? And what do you make of what both David Frank and David Boeri earlier said, that they think this case is going all the way to the Supreme Court when it comes to the issue of what honest services are for state-level legislators and what they can get paid for and what they can't. There's a difference in state and federal law here, apparently, but what's the right answer? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, we're joined now in the studio by David Bernstein. He's a political reporter, the political reporter, I should say, for the Boston Phoenix. Welcome back, David.
Glad to be here.
Also with us is Craig Sandler, managing editor and owner of the Statehouse News Service. Craig, welcome back.
Thanks, and I just want to say, David, that's a good description. David is the political reporter.
So, David Bernstein, let me start with you. You've been following this pretty closely.
Sure. Mostly cribbing off the State House News Service reports.
There's love all around here, but let's get to the heart of the matter. What do you think of the guilty verdict?
Well, I guess it's not surprising, but it's stunning in a sense. It really, I think that most of us, and I have to say, I have not been in the courtroom as David Boeri, for instance, has and others. And I'm a real believer that if you're not in that courthouse day after day, seeing every bit of the arguments and back and forth, you really can't judge a case. So I don't want to do that. But I think most of us really thought that Sal DeMasi was more likely to be found guilty than not. These were very serious charges and very serious things that, it certainly looked like he did, at least, circumstantially. So, but to have it come down, and so quickly, to me it felt like a very quick turnaround verdict for a jury, considering a number of charges on three different defendants over a, very complicated, in some cases, instructions. So for them to come back that quickly was a little stunning, too.
I wasn't that surprised, actually, that they came back that quickly. I've heard a lot of people say they were. In a way, I sort of wasn't, and perhaps that's because I talk, A, to any number of lawyers, and, B, talk specifically to lawyers who wanted Sal to be found not guilty. In other words, a lot of reps and what have you. And, it was almost unanimous. Everybody did think he was going down, even in that building. And so I think, the Judge Wolf really meant it when he said how well it was tried, but that means that, and given that, that means that it was clear to pretty much everybody that the case against him had really been made, and that, I guess, was really, really clear to the jury, too.
Mm-hmm. I guess, what's really sort of got everyone's attention now in thinking forward is what effect is this going to have on Beacon Hill? We've got a little bit more tape of reaction today. Here is Tom Dreschler. He's the attorney who represented Richard McDonough, also a defendant in this case, speaking about lobbying on Beacon Hill.
Everything that my client did, other than what Mr. Lally claimed, was consistent with what lobbyists do. And I really feel and felt and still feel that if you want to abolish lobbying, and you can't because it's a First Amendment right, you need to change the law, but not to punish someone for doing what lobbyists have done from time immemorial.
Well, joining us now is Pam Wilmot. She's executive director of Common Cause in Massachusetts. Pam, welcome back to Radio Boston. And, what's your reaction to what Tom Dreschler says, that, you can't ban lobbying, so how can you change Beacon Hill?
Oh, well, this wasn't just lobbying. This was kickbacks. This was a bid-rigging scheme. That is not lobbying. Lobbying is, in fact, has many, many valuable pieces to it. I am actually a lobbyist. I spend a lot of time trying to convince legislators to pass reform. That's a good thing. But this kind of self-dealing is a totally different animal, and frankly, I'm a little sick of everybody does it. Everybody doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. mean, there is a, in politics, certainly do something for me, I'll do something for you, but not this kind of self-dealing. So I think that's the good news. I think my reaction was very similar to David's and that and Craig's, and that I, given the testimony earlier of Joseph Lally, we really were not. I wasn't surprised that this was the outcome.
Well, you have been a very. I'm sorry to interrupt, Pam, but you've been a very close follower on sort of the evolution and trials, I should say, of maybe I shouldn't say, of good government on Beacon Hill. And that's what I'm wondering what you think this case is telling us. Does this case tell us that because Sal DeMacy received his fair hearing in court and a jury decided what it decided, that he was guilty, that it's actually the system is working here overall?
Well, I think the criminal justice system is working. And I think that we can't paint all elected officials with the same brush. They are not. We have many, many good people out there who are working very hard for the right reasons. That said, there are certain things we would certainly like to change in terms of rules around our campaign finance system, making government more transparent, we've tightened up our ethics laws, but there's always more that can be done. So changing some of the role of money in politics, we feel, is critical to making an even better system.
Well, on that note, I know I have you just for another minute, but I want to play another quick piece of tape. This is Sal DeMacy again today, just after the verdict was handed down, kind of talking about this issue that you mentioned, that or a subpart of this issue about how lawmakers get paid, and now that's part of the problem, or don't get paid enough. So here is Sal DeMacy again, just a little earlier today.
A situation where I was an attorney, I practiced law for 30 years while I was a legislator. I complied with all of the state requirements of that. We practiced law because we were able to have an outside income under the legislative exemption under state law. But evidently, federal law seems to require something different. And it was an unknown factor for all of us.
So, Pam Wilmot, it's that phrase, the outside income, which is appropriate and allowed under state law. Do you advocate changing that particular part of the law and maybe, giving legislators a raise so that the lure isn't there so much?
Well, in fact, I did sit on a task force that Governor DePaul Patrick put together that recommended prohibiting outside income for the House Speaker and the Senate President. Raising their salaries so we wouldn't have this potential out there. There is always an issue with professional services and lawyers particularly, but given the fact that the legislature does oversee the courts, et cetera. But I don't think we're ever going to move to a situation where legislators are full-time and can't have any jobs. It just would cost too much money. I don't think the state would go there. But there are inherent conflicts of interest, but I also take exception with what was done was the practice of law.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly was not, at least according to the jury's estimation of the facts. Lawyers do work. They do not take money for steering contracts in one direction or another.
Pam Wilmot, Executive Director of Common Cause in Massachusetts, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We are talking about the guilty verdict in the trial of former House Speaker Sal DeMacy. We want to hear what you have to say. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm joined by David Bernstein, political reporter for the Boston Phoenix, and Craig Sandler, managing editor of State House News Service. I want to get you guys back in here in just a second, but we've already got several callers who want to join us. So let's head over to Brighton, where David's on the line. You're on the air, David.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. This all sounds very familiar. In 1995, I was on a jury trial. I was on the jury for the trial of Bob Woodward, who was a Massachusetts chairman of the House Life Insurance Committee, subcommittee. And he was accused and found guilty of taking bribes from a lobbyist from John Hancock. It was on the same honest services sort of provision. This was a federal court, and he was under the mail and wire fraud. The judge gave very complicated instructions. We had to ask for that part in writing. The jury reviewed it for 3 days, made some very good nuanced decisions, and he was found guilty on, I think, you know, half of the 14 charges or so. 17 years later, nothing's changed.
Hmm. David, thank you so much for your call. Craig Sandler, your reaction to at least one listener who says, more of the same.
Sure. And Woodward was pretty powerful. He was a committee chair. I will say that I think he was probably subject to, something that people have been talking about for the last couple of months as this has been going on. And the question I always get asked is, what is wrong with those guys? What's in the water? What's in the air? And, of course, I get asked that, you know, on the radio, too. And one thing that I really, I don't know if enjoyed is the right word, but one thing I really appreciated about this trial was the way it lifted the hood on why they lose track of the obvious. And it's so clear from the testimony and all we heard that everybody tells these guys, yes, 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 yes. And they get so used to hearing it that they assume that is what explains why they feel that they can get away with anything. People who otherwise would be, they're no-sayers, people like Leslie Kerwin in A&F, or the governor himself, they do kowtow inside that building to the needs of the powerful, partly because they're pursuing their own, you know, self-interest in other ways, political ways.
Craig's absolutely right. I actually wrote a cover story in the Phoenix before DeMacy was indicted called DeMacy's Sheep, talking about how the system works and how basically both by virtue of how he ran the place but also how people in the place behaved with him had the effect of basically, everything that he wanted done would be done. And it's not that much different under other speakers. The difference is, and I think there's a huge difference that I think, tends to get blurred. It's a little annoying to me, and I'm sure to Craig, that, this blurring of, they all do it, or, oh, this is the third speaker in a row, and all that kind of thing, when clearly this is something of a very different type and scale. This was a guy who rose to the one of the most powerful positions in the state and decided, according to what we've now heard and have judged.
Conscious decision to
use that power as an illegal moneymaker for himself and his friends.
Okay, so different. I don't want to be, I'm definitely not the kind of person to use the broadest of brushes and say that everybody does it. Absolutely not. But there's got to be something unique going on when three House speakers in a row get indicted on federal charges.
Well, caller David's point was that nothing changes. Now, I think that it is the case that in any kind of power dynamic, whatever you want to name, Boston University, the United States State Department, any kind of power dynamic, the people at the top are going to hear yes too often. That is not going to change. What absolutely has to change is the outward and the inward, behind closed doors, behavior of these speakers. Because this is also the third speaker in a row, and I'm talking about Sal DeMacy, the third speaker in a row, I've heard promise to clean up the place, raise it to the highest level of ethics. And in fact, you can do that. You can change an internal culture where you can tell people, you're going to be told yes all the time. Resist the implications of that. It is absolutely the case that you can do that. Remember, one of the things that Tom Finneran got convicted of lying about was whether he could remember the name of his own district. Everybody knows that he could remember the name of his own district. It is in fact their responsibility not to do things, not just sell honest services or perjure themselves, but to actually think about what it means to invite convicted speakers onto the rostrum, as we saw a few months ago. Yeah. That's the kind of behavior that's pretty easy to change. And hopefully DeLeo, being the fourth in a row now, to promise to raise the ethical standards and the behavior of the institution, hopefully he'll be the one to break the pattern. Somebody will. But
well, we'll see, because he was the guy who, had those former speakers come up, as the tradition is, and be applauded on the roster and allowed it, and that kind of thing is really very disappointing. And he was also the guy who was, and this is not a knock at Bobby DeLeo, who is part of the system. And,
he deserves that knock.
He deserves that knock. And he was also the head of the Ways and Means Committee that was, for instance, in the case of, the ace ticket scandal, if you will, that was not part of this trial. He's the guy who drops that kind of thing in when DeMacy asks, without making a fuss, or even, as a matter of fact, when he was running that committee, even running it by the members of the committee who found out about those kinds of things after they happened.
David and Craig, sorry, just want to jump in here just a second and share with listeners some reaction that's been coming from various other parts of Massachusetts government. Senator Scott Brown issued a statement today saying, "I applaud the jurors in the Sal DeMacy corruption trial for sending a message that business as usual, go along to get along mentality in Massachusetts politics will not be tolerated." That's from Senator Scott Brown. Senate President Therese Murray issued a statement where she says, "This is a sad day for the Commonwealth. The verdict highlights the misconduct of one person and one person's betrayal of the public trust. This is not how we do business in the Commonwealth and in this institution. The actions of one person should not cast a shadow on the dedicated public servants in the legislature and all their good work." Governor Deval Patrick was also asked about it today, and here's a little bit of what he had to say.
"I went up and answered the questions that were put to me and answered them as completely as I could. And certainly, honestly, and the process, as I say, has run its course, and I hope it means, as I said, the end of a very disappointing chapter."
Governor Deval Patrick there, of course, referring to the fact that he was on the witness list in the trial of former House Speaker Sal DeMacy. David and Craig, I guess one question which sticks with me in this story, regardless of how the case continues to wind its way through the appellate process. Both of you watch Beacon Hill very closely, and I'm just wondering, there's two issues of accountability and transparency. I mean, what practically can be done to increase both accountability and transparency on Beacon Hill?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, is that, when we talk about the power of the speaker, and this, if I can make sort of a broad point that's true of, at the national level as well, that very typically, the House side of a bicameral chamber is, it's big, it's sloppy, it's messy, and so to make it function, it tends to push power. The rules, you tend to make rules that push power very centrally to handle it all, whereas the Senate, you look at nationally, the Senate is something where, individual senators have a lot of power, individual committee, people running committees. Even on the House side, it can change back and forth depending on the rules. Mm-hmm. Depending, for instance, here in Massachusetts, getting named to a committee chairmanship comes with a lot of money, and so a lot of people are going to be very good to the people in power, including the Speaker and others, on their way up, so that they can be rewarded with positions that are monetarily lucrative, and then not lose those. And that, some people feel, is very corrupting. And it's a very centralized, we have about as centralized a system there in the House and the Senate, as you can imagine.
Craig, we've just got about a minute left, but last thought goes to you.
Elect more Republicans. That is how you could reform the state. And that's not me advocating the Republican Party per se, but there is an unquestioned balancing effect to having a two-party system. It imposes the kind of behavioral modification I was suggesting earlier. And in this state, the real problem, of course, is that Republicans are synonymous with conservatives, and this state doesn't really like to elect conservatives. Having said that, they don't mind at all electing moderates to conservatives, and there is a wing of the a pretty moderate to conservative wing of the Democratic Party. If more of those guys became Republicans, by name, reform Republicans running as moderates, I think things would change.
Advocate there for a healthy democracy, even at the state level. Craig Sandler, managing editor of State House News, thanks so much for being with us as always.
Thank you.
And David Bernstein, political reporter for the Boston Phoenix, thank you.
My pleasure.
As we've said, Sal DeMacy becomes the third House Speaker in a row to be caught up in federal corruption charges while in office. The DeMacy convictions are by far the most serious of the three, but it's fair to say they seem to be part of a pattern. For reaction from Beacon Hill, we're joined now by WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Hi, Martha.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Very well. Give us a sense of what you're hearing in the halls of government.
Well, a lot of people are very shaken up here today. They were a bit stunned by the verdict. They are trying to go about business as usual. There was a session in the House today where people were scurrying back and forth for votes. But many lawmakers didn't want to talk at all. They just were not ready to figure out what to say, as far as I could tell. There's a sense that there has to be a more public effort to clean up, as some of the guests were just talking about. But there's also the acknowledgement that there have been recent convictions of speakers and that there should have been some cleanup with the convictions or guilty pleas of former Speaker Charlie Flaherty and former Speaker Tom Finneran. Hmm. So when I spoke to Republican Bob Hedlund about that, he said, you know, in fact, he thinks things have gotten worse during his tenure, meaning in the years since we had those prior scandals and now the conviction of Speaker DeMacy. Here's Bob Hedlund.
In fact, we've moved, I think, in the opposite direction since I arrived, where I've seen over my tenure here, more power concentrated in the hands of the presiding officers in both branches.
So that's Bob Hedlund. Martha, any sense that any of this is moving toward some kind of real action that could lead to some kind of change up at Beacon Hill?
Well, Bob Hedlund and other Republicans spoke, as I believe Craig just did, about the need for a better balance of power, for a better representation of Republicans. Although Hedlund did acknowledge that his party is not scandal-free. Some Democrats talked about revisiting the push for stronger ethics laws and lobbying laws, although they think they've done that. In fact, some of them say that the conviction of Speaker today proves that the laws worked. So what the biggest challenge seems to be to try to restore public trust, and it mm-hmm. isn't really clear how to do that.
Sorry, Martha. Many of DeMacy's former colleagues in the House remain loyal to him and are defending his legacy today, even as they acknowledge the guilty verdict. And I'm wondering if you got a sense of what you're hearing from them.
So, Anthony, on that point, they are frustrated. They don't think that Speaker got a fair shake. They feel like he walked into a courtroom where the perception is that business on Beacon Hill is done under a veil, under a cloud of corruption, and that he really didn't have the opportunity to make his case before a neutral jury. Now, most of them are not willing to say that on the facts he was not guilty, but there is the sense that he didn't get a fair shake. And then there are other lawmakers who look back at his legacy and shake their heads and try to understand how someone to whom they credit the first in the country's near universal health care law, the legalization of or the protection of gay marriage, transformative environmental laws and such, they don't really understand how the man they understood as the champion of those things could be the person who is now going to jail. So here's Frank Smizek of Brookline.
He was a good rep, good leader. He had vision. When he was the speaker, we got health care passed. We got gay marriage. We got several great environmental bills that put us in the lead in the country.
Frank Smizek of Brookline ending that report there. WBUR's Martha Biebinger, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's Martha Biebinger reporting from Beacon Hill.